Good morning. This is Talking Animals on WMNF. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guest today is Anton Patushkin, director of the documentary Saving the Animals of Ukraine. Premiering tonight, May 15th, on the PBS series Nature, Saving the Animals of Ukraine profiles the efforts of an array of Ukrainian citizens to rescue animals amidst the bombing and destruction of the war. Patushkin tells a string of inspiring and compelling stories in this film, and Patushkin's own story is pretty striking. He's a YouTuber turned war correspondent. The efforts chronicled in this hour-long documentary include rescuing cats and dogs, among them a cat, Shafa, who was spotted in the bombed-out ruins of the seventh-floor apartment where he'd been stranded for 2 months with no food or water. Shafa not only survived, but eventually became a social media star. Another animal who stood out, this one representing the endeavors to liberate and relocate the country's zoo animals, was Bretzel, a lion who had been confined to a very small enclosure near the front lines, so the shelling, with nowhere for him to retreat to, was particularly traumatizing. This story, too, ended up with a much improved ending. This in no way is to suggest saving the animals of Ukraine consists of merely rosy sagas and success stories. Indeed, the film examines the repercussions of being an animal, pet, captive, or wild, in a war-torn country, and it's often as harrowing as you might imagine. We'll hear about saving the animals of Ukraine when I speak with director Anton Patushkin in a moment here on Talking Animals on WMNF. First, a programming note. In exactly 2 weeks, on May 29th, WMNF Summer Fund Drive begins, and I'll be raising money on Talking Animals on the very first day, May 29th. Typically assigned a pretty sizable fundraising goal, especially for a one-hour show. I've learned over the years that the only real prospect of reaching that kind of goal is to receive pledges before the fund drive show itself. So I'm hoping you might consider donating before May 29th. How about today, for example? Any amount, $35, $50, or if you can swing more, $100, $200, maybe even go all the way up to $250 or $500, why not? Would be greatly appreciated. So to do so, please visit WMNF.org and in the upper right-hand corner, click on Donate Now on the secure donation form that opens up. And toward the bottom, which is labeled Designate to All of WMNF, there's a drop-down menu with options of where to direct your donation. Please select TLA, Talking Animals. That's the phrase, TLA, Talking Animals, so that our show is credited with your donation. Thank you very much. Meanwhile, coming up later in today's program, I'll play back an interview I recorded yesterday with Largo Police Sergeant Haley Cicada, the handler of Pension, the department's first therapy dog, brought in with the intention of providing comfort to Largo Police employees and to reduce the anxiety of crime victims. Pension is a one-year-old rescue who underwent considerable training, followed by Sergeant Cicada and Pension going through extensive training together in preparation for this new assignment. We'll learn more about Pension and his status as Largo Police Department's first therapy dog when I play back my conversation with Sergeant Cicada a bit later in the show. Right now, though, let's talk animals in Ukraine and a film about various efforts to help those animals with that film's director, Anton Patushkin. With a reminder that I invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing dj at wmnf.org, or texting 813-433-0885. Let's welcome Anton Patushkin to Talking Animals on WMNF. Good morning, Anton.
Good morning, Duncan.
So, first of all, am I pronouncing Patushkin correctly, or do I need to fix up my pronunciation?
You're pronouncing amazing.
Wow. Okay, we're off to a good start then. Excellent. Very, very good. All right.
And by the way, I do like your jingle, opening jingle.
Oh, okay, good. Well, okay, we're off to two good starts. Maybe we should just leave it there. I don't know if we can go any better than two good things already. So maybe that's where we leave the whole conversation. But I do have things I want to talk to you about. And in fact, I think the film is excellent. Congratulations. I found it powerful, both upsetting at times and, of course, really uplifting at many other times. And you're described in the media notes that I kind of noted there in that introduction as a YouTuber turned war correspondent. What kind of YouTube pieces did you usually make before filming Saving the Animals of Ukraine?
I used to travel a lot. So I used to make a travel blog for like 4 or 5 years. And I was a host on a really popular travel show, which was popular in Ukraine and Russia and all former Soviet Union countries. But with the beginning of the full-scale invasion, I turned completely kind of switched my occupation and decided to kind of document all that stuff, all the war crimes that Russia's committing. And our team and our Canadian team, which is Yap Films, we decided to come up with the idea just to show this war on a slightly different angle and just to started to make a documentary about the animals.
Yeah.
And obviously, you would ask me, like, why we did that, why we chose this path. And like we in the beginning of the full-scale invasion, which was 2 years ago in February 2022, it was like a vast amount of photos and videos in the internet where people from Ukraine, Ukrainians, they were saving themselves, fleeing from the war, and saving themselves with their pets, sometimes saving their pets with the risk of their own life. And we were so amazed, so struck by this footage, so we decided to kind of to follow this story and just to start to make a documentary about the animals.
Was there a particular incident that animal-related or otherwise that sort of galvanized you into deciding this is the way we want to tell the story about what's going on in Ukraine through the perspective of what's happening with animals and animals being rescued? Was there something that triggered that in particular?
I have to confess that I'm not a cat person, dog person, or animal rights activist or whatsoever. But, you know, for me, it's just like, again, I'm telling these stories about animals in my mind, again, like we are talking about war. So it's just a slightly different angle to look at war. But at the same time, you know, I met a really special dog. The name of this dog is Patron. It's a really cute Jack Russell Terrier. And it was in the summer 2022. And this dog has a really interesting story because it was just a regular dog, but in the beginning of the full-scale invasion, this dog turned into a bomb-sniffing dog because his dog parent, Mikhail Ilyev, he's a colonel of engineer troops in Ukraine, and his basic job is to look for the mines. So he trained this cute Jack Russell Terrier to, look for the mines, and Patron became like a proper bomb-sniffing dog. And right now he's an internet meme, internet celebrity, and he has found more than 500 explosive objects. And for the first time in the history of UNICEF, he was nominated to be Goodwill Ambassador alongside with Orlando Bloom, Messi, David Beckham, and all sort of celebrities.
Wow.
So that was quite the starting point, the turning point for me. We decided to just follow the story of Patron and then realize that there are so many stories animals related stories.
Well, before we move on from Patron and talk about some of those other stories, a couple of things that I thought really made that story distinct, although you've kind of hit the high points already, is that I think it is the colonel there had gotten Patron with the idea of being a dog that would go to dog shows, compete as a Jack Russell Terrier, just in terms of just a, you know, exemplary version of the breed. So I thought that was really interesting because I don't think anybody anticipated at that point that he would become a bomb-sniffing dog. And the other thing that I think is really important for people listening, and they'll of course see this when they see the film tonight, is that one of the things I've always worried about with dogs that are used to detect landmines, etc., bombs, is like, what happens when they risk setting one off in the course of their duties there. So I was really fascinated and relieved to hear that his Patron is, I guess, just the perfect size. Like I think they said in the film somewhere, it's like he's 9 pounds. And I think you have to be 10 pounds or more to actually trigger a landmine. So if I have that correct, he can go pretty much anywhere and detect those bombs and not put himself at risk for triggering one of the bombs.
Yeah, you're totally correct.
I mean, that's great. I think, that, like I say, that probably puts a lot of people's mind at ease. Like, well, this guy's doing some great work, but what if he stumbles into the wrong area and sets one off, which I guess actually can't happen just based on his weight. So that's pretty good.
Yeah, this is his kind of super ability, and especially when he's detecting like an anti-tank mine, which is really big, but anti-personnel, which really common in Ukraine. In Ukraine right now, unfortunately, is the most polluted with the landmines territory in the world. Approximately 25% of our territory is polluted with the landmines and with some other explosive things. So, yeah, like sappers, engineer troops, they have so much work to deal with. I mean, so there's a lot of work to patrol for many years to come.
For sure. Do you know how many bomb-detecting dogs there are in addition to Patron that are doing that kind of work?
Yeah, like many, many of them. But, you know, like right now, I know that a lot of like special machines They are just neutralizing and finding those bones.
Oh, okay.
You know, there are certain territories where, I mean, there is no way for this big machine, you know, just to go. So that's where Patron comes to business.
I see. So when it's not accessible for the machine, that's where Patron comes in.
Yeah, for sure.
That's great. Let me let folks know who might just be tuning in. This is Talking Animals on WMNF. I'm Duncan Strauss. If you did just tune in, my guest is Anton Patushkin, director of the documentary Saving the Animals of Ukraine, premiering May 15th. That's tonight, of course, on the PBS series Nature. The film profiles the efforts of an array of Ukrainian citizens to rescue animals amid the bombing and destruction of the war. If you have questions for Anton or would like to offer a comment, please call 813-239-9663, email dj@wmnf.org, or text 813-433-0885. So, speaking of high-profile, or at least social media high-profile animals, let's talk for a moment about Shafa.
Yeah, so as you mentioned, I mean, this is like the internet phenomenon, because this cat was actually, it was stuck between 7th and 8th floor in the really tiny city of Borodyanka, which is close to the Kiev, like it was like an hour approximately from Kiev.
Mm-hmm.
And this city was hardly bombarded by Russian planes. And a particular one plane, one bomb, completely destroyed the residential building. And I believe like around 50 people died at that date. It was 2 years ago. And so entire block of the 9-story building was kind of devastated, destroyed. And in this tiny section of this building, this tiny cat survived without food, without water, for almost 2 months. It's like more than 60 days. We don't know. Anybody can tell me like how that happened. And we describe it as a miracle. But more importantly, that this cat was eventually, he was spotted by Canadian journalists who was there, and they didn't believe their own eyes, because, you know, it was kind of, the bombardment took place in the beginning of March 2022, and that event that I'm talking about, this kind of discovery of Shafa, it was on May 1st, so it was like more than 2 months, and they discovered this cat, and this cat was rescued by firefighters, and I need to mention that this cat is 13 years old. So he's really old, and I don't know like how he survived, but he survived, and he became again like an internet phenomenon and influencer. And because, you know, he has really like obviously audience should watch, you know, this movie, because in order to see this cat, because he has a really grumpy face, you know.
Yeah.
And
I think they said a mean face, which I thought was funny, because it's like this guy charmed everybody in the country once the picture and the social media started being posted regularly. But they kept, the guy has a distinctive face, let's put it that way, maybe more kindly.
Yeah, and it's a really eloquent face, because, you know, for Ukrainians, this became a symbol of resilience and strength of Ukrainians who are just like really don't want to kind of bored and really worried about Russians. And so this cat become a symbol, and eventually he fundraised like a lot of money. And one animal rights movement, like organization, with the help of Shafa, they successfully built the animal shelter in the Kyiv region just because of that story.
Yeah, it's incredible, really, that... I mean, the story is remarkable that he survived, especially since, as you noted, he was kind of a little more senior cat to begin with, and then 60 days without food or water, it's a phenomenon. But then he himself became a phenomenon with all the social media, and that's, as you say, I think, drew all kinds of donations. People, like, just wanted to support this cat in whatever way. And again, I think it was, like some of these stories we're talking about, kind of symbolic on a different level with what was going on in Ukraine. And people just said, like, let me send some money there and help Shafa, or help whoever can be helped by my donation. Like you said, that led to the building of the shelter.
Yeah.
Now let's talk about, there's a much bigger cat prominently featured in the film that offers kind of a yet another significant saga of resilience. This, of course, I'm referring to Bretzel. I made a passing reference to him in the introduction to the show. Can you talk a little bit about Bretzel? Because that also involves a whole different kind of level of rescue that was going on that you document in the film.
So Bretzel is a lion. It's the name of lion.
Right.
And this lion was kept probably as a pet, because we don't know much about the story of Bretzel, but he was being kept as a kind of like a pet in a tiny cage in close to the front line. So it's the city of Kramatorsk, Donetsk region. I believe it's like a 40, 50 kilometers away from actual ground zero, from the front line. And I mean, this territory is really frequently bombarded by Russian troops. And this poor lion, he was in these conditions, you know, in this really tiny premises. And obviously he had really severe symptoms of PTSD, really. So eventually he was evacuated by a brave woman, Natalia Popova. I would like to tell something about her lately. But this lion was evacuated by Natalia Popova in Kyiv. And in Kyiv, Kyiv also was bombarded like many times. So this poor lion, again, was kind of severely traumatized. And he was, during Russian airstrike, he was trying to break away his cage, and he smashed his face against the cage.
Yeah.
And eventually, he was evacuated to Spain, and he completely recovered. And for me, you know, this is a really prominent story, because it shows that, first of all, animals, like even big animals, big cats, they also going through a lot of stress, a lot of traumatization during these horrible events, but they can be recovered. So they can recover. And I think that, for me, it's a really, really good parallel with people, you know, who also been traumatized by the war, and they can recover. So in this regard, I think that we are, like, people and animals, they are really close to each other. So as I like to say, we share the same suffering, unfortunately. And it was become especially visible during this war.
Yeah, I felt so bad for when we first meet Bretzel, and again, it was such a, I guess, not once but twice, when it was in a very confined space and the bombing was going on so close. Like you said, he, you know, I guess just kind of panicked and flipped out and slammed his face against the bars, and he just felt like this guy was so traumatized. Like you say, it's a PTSD situation. So then later, when we see him at that sanctuary in Spain, he looks pretty much like a lion would look otherwise.
Yeah, like I remember filming him in summer 2022 in Kyiv, and I remember when I just passed his cage, he would roar at me, like really hard roar.
Yeah,
and I was thinking that if some kind of aggression against me, because like I'm enemy for him, but it turned out that it was not aggression, it was fear, and so he was kind of, he has this fear because he was severely traumatized. So, you know,
yeah,
and that was, again, there's some revelation to me.
Right. And like you said, like you're kind of drawing the parallel between some of these animals that have recovered and are showing all kinds of resilience. And I guess you're drawing a parallel between some of the people of Ukraine that are hopefully experiencing some of the same kind.
I mean, for me, Duncan, for me, this whole story, this whole movie that hopefully audience is about to watch this evening on TBS, It's about animals for sure, because it's a part of nature series of PBS, but it's also about people, and it's something completely unique about PBS and nature, because I believe that audience of PBS Nature is expecting to see movie, documentary solely about animals, but the truth is it's also about people and people traits. So for me, if you ask me, like, what is this movie is all about, I would ask that it's about human traits.
Yeah. No, that's really true. And some of the people that are rescuing these animals, we'll talk a bit more about some of them in a moment, but are themselves extraordinary people for sure, because they're putting themselves often in harm's way to rescue those animals or to relocate a lion or whatever the case may be. And you see their dedication and their passion is driving them despite, again, whatever kind of risk is involved. So you feel like this is a powerful film on multiple levels.
Thank you so much.
So let me remind people, because I had someone write in and ask what time. So again, this is we're speaking with Anton Petushkin, director of the documentary Saving the Animals of Ukraine, that airs tonight for the first time, May 15th, on the PBS series Nature. And someone wrote in and asked what time. And I think most PBS stations, the airtime is 8 p.m., so you might just want to check your listings, but I think that's the common time. Occasionally, I think it's at a different time in a different market, but that's likely to be the airtime. So if you'd like to ask Anton a question about the film or about the animals or about what's going on in Ukraine or anything else kind of related to what we're discussing, feel free to call on 813-239-9663. Email dj at wmnf.org or text 813-433-0885. So I don't mean to suggest, but some of the stories we're talking about and some of the kind of more positive outcomes, that all the stories here involve triumphs. The film does show a major dog shelter that had to be abandoned by all those who were helping the animals, the dogs and other animals, I guess they're volunteers primarily, because of the bombing. So then the film sort of returns after 45 days where I guess it's kind of deemed safe and the volunteers were asked to return to the shelter. So what happens next is a pretty dramatic scene. Maybe you could describe that a little bit.
Yeah, Duncan, thank you. I don't want to spoil too much.
Okay, that's fine. We can just say that we can just say whatever I just said and then leave it there. And then people will tune in and see kind of what happens once the volunteers return. So, yeah.
Yeah, I just want to mention that, yeah, it's a movie about the war. And war is it's a horrible tragedy for the old people in Ukraine. But at the same time, I believe this is the heartwarming movie. It's not only about, I don't know, some bad things, but it's just, there could be some, I don't know, some tears during this movie, but I believe it has uplifting sense.
Yeah. Well, at the beginning, I think when I introduced you and we started talking, I even said I think it was timed, of course, a bit upsetting just because how could it not be given the subject matter. But largely, primarily, it was really more uplifting. And I think that's kind of the power of the film.
Yeah. And, you know, yesterday we spoke with Fred Kaufman, who is the CEO of PBS Nature. He's an amazing man. And he just tells us something like behind story of making this movie and accepting it to PBS Nature. And he said that for the first, when he first time heard about this movie, he thought, okay, that's for sure not the PBS Nature material. But eventually, it's airing right now. It's airing this evening on PBS Nature. And I think that it's quite unique for PBS. And I'm eager to know what the audience feedback would be.
Yeah, no, for sure. And we just had someone else write in by email clarifying that at least locally it airs at 8 p.m. and repeats at 11 p.m. on Spectrum. That's WEDU Channel 3. So that's even more information about making sure you have a chance to catch this film, Saving the Animals of Ukraine, directed by Anton Petushkin, my guest right now on Talking Animals on WMNF. So was there a particular rescue story presented in the film that you might consider your favorite for one reason or another, or just struck you particularly in one way or another?
I believe the Bretzel story is, one of my favorites, but there are so many stories that, like, I shot 85 hours of raw footage, and so it was a lot of stories, believe me, because, you know, it's just dozens of stories about people saving their pets. But eventually in the movie, we presented like three or four stories. But it's really interesting to hear a story about an organization called Zoo Patrol.
Yeah.
Evacuating pets in the very beginning of full-scale invasion. It was March 2022, and they were kind of break into closed apartments because some people, situation was really unpredictable at that time. So some people, they leave their pets behind, thinking that they might return in a day or two, but the truth was they returned 2, maybe 3 months after. So this organization called Zoo Patrol, they would break into apartments, close, I mean, just break, you know, the doors in order to save cats and dogs from starvation. But eventually they become like they sort of figure out the most creative way. So they would unscrew the peephole and put some tube inside this kind of peephole, and they would, I mean, just use this tube in order to deliver water and food into closed apartments to feed cat or dog. And I find this way is really creative and sort of unique way, you know, just how to save animals in closed apartments.
Yeah, I know the problem solving that you're able to capture when they're just figuring out what's the best way to help these animals that are essentially kind of trapped inside these affected apartments and places and whatever, and to see the way his solution kind of evolves to a more effective way to help provide food and water to these animals was impressive. And one of the things, too, that speaking of him, that's Dimitri, I believe, right? Was his name?
Yeah, Dimitri.
Yeah. So at one point in the film, he says, the war dramatically changed the life of every Ukrainian, mine included, changed dramatically. If someone told me I would be saving animals, I would have laughed in their face. But then I realized this is my mission. So I just thought that was really powerful. And again, you really...
Yeah, it's really powerful. Yeah, and you know, this is also legit for a lot of people in Ukraine, for me personally as well, because, you know, as you mentioned, I was a travel blogger before the full-scale invasion, but like I become a kind of documentary filmmaker.
Yeah.
But it was not my intention. It was kind of just like because I had to document all sort of things and just eventually to make this documentary. But as Vyacheslav Chernov, who is the director of award-winning documentary 20 Days in Mariupol, he said that, quote, like, I would rather not have become a documentary filmmaker for such a cause. So this is 100% true for me as well. So, like, I don't want to be a documentary filmmaker and document stories about this war, about the war in general.
But yeah.
Because Russia invaded Ukraine, and I don't have a choice. So.
Right. It sounds like in some ways, like Dimitri said about what drove him, and then he summarized it by saying, this is my mission. It sounds like your mission in this particular instance was to make this documentary film, but that's not necessarily what you want to be doing, apart from sort of feeling like you needed to in this case.
Yes, and it's also true for a lot of people. For example, for Natalia Popova, who is the saver of this pretzel line, she has been saving animals, particularly like big cats, for many years. But she, like, since the full-scale invasion, she turned herself into kind of animal rescuer, and her basic missions is just to go to the front line and to find, like, an abandoned lion. Sorry, I know it may sound really cruel, but, you know, yeah. People, like, abandon their pets, and I know it may sound cynical that I use the term pets for the lions, but yeah, that's reality, and she would evacuate those lions, and in order to evacuate lion, I didn't think about it, actually, before shooting of this documentary, you have to tranquilize lion, because there is no way how you can transfer, you know, this big cat. And this brave woman, she, because a lot of vets, they refuse to go to the front line because it's really dangerous. So this brave woman, she tranquilized lions on her own, and she kind of drives small truck on her own. So she's like a multi-tool, and she saved, I believe, around 50 lions for 2 years. And this,
wow,
is like, this is insane amount of work and bravery.
Yeah. Not to mention, again, the risk level is high in multiple ways.
Yeah, for sure. You know, like, I was in the front lines, like, a couple of times, and I was in the city of Bakhmut. I don't know, have you heard about the city, which is right now completely devastated, so leveled to the ground by Russian troops. And we filmed, like, evacuation of pets from Bakhmut, like, 2 years ago, almost 2 years ago. And right now, the city, like, it doesn't exist anymore.
Wow.
So that's why, I mean, to document these events is so crucial because, you know, stories is changing drastically. And what's interesting about documentary, because, again, I'm from YouTube world, so documentary filmmaking is something quite new for me. I mean, that's, you have to just, you're following some, I know, some talents, some people, and just waiting for some events to happen. And it could be some good events and some really, really bad events. And I just want to share the story because it's not included in documentary, in PBS version of documentary, but I was shooting some soldier in Donetsk region. And, you know, it's again, it's interesting phenomenon that a lot of soldiers of Ukrainian army, they are adopting stray dogs and cats on the front lines. And it's really natural, you know, to see like a soldier heavily geared with a rifle or a gun and with a tiny cat in his hands. And it's so moving, you know, it's so heartwarming. But they would keep, you know, these animals in order to kind of chill, in order to, because, you know, animals, sure, they help drastically to cope with the stress. I think you know that. And on the front lines where soldiers, they're dealing with a huge amount of stress, those animals, they really, really help them to kind of keep psyche, like to keep their mental level at a certain amount. So this soldier, which I met like almost two years ago in Donetsk region, he adopted some dog. And I was just like, I made an interview with him, and this dog was so adorable. But 8 months later, I figured out that this guy was killed.
Oh, jeez.
Yes. And the only footage and the only possible memory about him, it was kind of my footage that I was made, especially, you know, for this documentary. And a couple months later, I figure out that his wife of this deceased soldier, she decided to adopt this dog in memory of her deceased husband. And I came to her apartment. It's in the Ukrainian city of Zaporizhia, and she has beautiful girls and this dog. The name of the dog is Tank. And she told me that except for the memory of her husband, this dog really, really helps her to cope with huge stress and bad memories, you know. So yeah, that's how pets and animals help us humans,
yeah,
you know, just to feel ourselves better, to feel ourselves as humans.
Yeah, well, I think there's a part of the film that kind of maybe more specifically even suggests that, where someone's talking about being a soldier, maybe meaning even just various other acts of war, and how that dehumanizes you, and how, on the other hand, a dog or a cat can help restore part of your humanity that's lost through that.
Yeah, that's true. It's completely legit. And, you know, again, that's a part of the reasons why we made this film. Because, you know, frankly speaking, have you heard about Bucha? Heard about Bucha? Don't go.
I don't think so.
So this is the city close to Kyiv where kind of partially captured by Russian troops 2 years ago. And they commit so many atrocities. And, I mean, that's a horrible story. And so eventually this city was freed by Ukrainian army. So we just kind of recaptured the city. After, you know, this story of Bucha, I believe that, human life become devalued.
Yeah.
Again, it may sound cynical, but, I mean, that's how, like, this is what we face in the war.
For sure.
And, you know, those story with pets, I don't know how it works, but I mean, those story with pets, they're just like, they're breaking hearts, and they're so heartwarming, and they again believe, like, they brings you back to being human.
Yeah,
which is really crucial in these types.
Absolutely,
of
it's so powerful, and it's so restoring, and again, where we see both animals and humans are resilient in tough circumstances. So, Anton, I think we have unfortunately reached the end of our time, but I've really enjoyed speaking with you. And again, I really love the film. The film is called Saving the Animals of Ukraine. It airs tonight on PBS show Nature. Again, in most markets, that's 8 p.m. And Anton, thank you again for joining us today on Talking Animals, and thank you for making a wonderful film.
Thank you for having me, Duncan.
Thank you. In a moment, I'll play back a conversation I recorded yesterday with Sergeant Haley Cicada of the Largo Police Department, which just brought in the department's first therapy dog, who is named Pension. Sergeant Haley is Pension's handler, and their main missions are to provide comfort to Largo Police employees and to reduce the anxiety of various victims of crime. There are some more details when I play back that interview in just a moment here on Talking Animals on WMNF. Right now, though, we're going to step into the comedy corner. I wanted to select something rescue-related and a nod to the film we just discussed, of course. tapping a longtime favorite. Here's Jim Gaffigan with a piece I've renamed A Good Dad / I Rescued a Dog in today's Comedy Corner on Talking Animals on WMNF.
Trying to be a good dad, and I got my kids a dog. I rescued a dog. Thank you. Thank you. It's not like the dog was drowning. The dog wasn't a victim of sex trafficking. I just went in a building, gave a guy money, and got a dog. That's how I rescued it. After that, I rescued a pizza. I had to wait to rescue the dog because the dog was in Jamaica. I don't know if it was on vacation. But I rescued a dog from paradise so it could live in my crowded New York City apartment. Sometimes I put the leash on the dog and it looks at me like, I used to run on the beach. And now I sleep in a cage. My only hope is that one day you'll get rescued. But rescue is the language of today, right? We mean adoption. Now, people don't even say they own dogs. Now people say they're a dog parent. But I feel like dogs are different from kids. Like, you never hear a parent say, you know, my son had some behavior problems, so we gave him to a friend who had a farm upstate. That way he can run around and we'll visit him on weekends. Jim, you're a monster.
That was Jim Gaffigan. In today's Comedy Corner, with a piece I've called A Good Dad / I Rescued a Dog, taken from his album, Noble Ape. Now it's time to hear my interview recorded yesterday with Sergeant Haley Cicada of the Largo Police Department about the department's first ever therapy dog. His name is Pension. Here's that talk with Sergeant Cicada on Talking Animals on WMNF. Welcome, Sergeant Cicada. Thanks so much for joining me today on Talking Animals.
Of course, yes. Thank you for having me.
For sure. There's so many things I find wonderful about this story. How did this whole therapy dog development come about? I understand you were pivotal at every stage of this.
Well, I saw the need, I think, in the agency. We had a loss of an agency member to suicide. In the past couple years, we've had a handful, if not more, of officer-involved shootings. And there just seemed to be this need kind of to break the silence when we all came together to talk about it afterwards. We would all, you know, go to debrief and everybody's like, well, who's going to start first? And we randomly, people would bring by their pets by the department, you know, just for a minute or so. And all of a sudden you see everybody's face light up and everything change. And I just kind of sort of became obsessed with trying to get a therapy dog for the police department so that he would be here to break the ice.
So when you talk about your colleagues and others bringing the pets by, so that was obviously just kind of informal, but it sounds like for you it was sort of a light bulb moment, like, hey, look at the way people are affected by this. Maybe I should do something more official. Is that kind of the thinking?
Absolutely, yes. An officer may have been stopping by to get a piece of paperwork and they just would bring their dog in. Or we had another officer who had recently gotten a new puppy. And so she brought it in just to say hi for a minute. And you just see, it's almost like a baby. Everybody comes out of their offices to say hi and they want to play with it. And everybody leaves with a smile. And so, yeah, that's kind of what prompted. I was like, there's something about an animal that just changes everything.
And so once you started thinking about that, take me through the next step. Did you quickly sort of figure out the answer here is a therapy dog, or were there some steps between the initial thought and deciding that was the thing you wanted to propose?
I think that for sure the whole therapy dog idea, I had seen it. So it definitely wasn't my original idea by any means. Sure. I had been to a few trainings and seen the idea floated. The Palm Beach County Sheriff's Office, the Pasco Sheriff's Office, they have very robust therapy dog programs. And I had been to a training in South Florida where I had met some of Palm Beach County's therapy dogs. And then I was just recently at a training in Pasco. And kind of every time I had seen the dogs in action, I would, you know, text the chief or send an email and say, hey, what about this? And for a while, we just were like, yeah, it's interesting, but I don't think we're ready as an agency, or maybe next time, or we'll look into it later. And I was recently at one in Pasco, and I texted the chief, and the response I got back was, that's not a bad idea. And okay. I was like, okay, that's my door. That's my opening.
So, yeah, that's the response you've been waiting for from all the previous suggestions, I guess, right?
Exactly. That was the moment when I was like, okay, that wasn't a no. So I immediately came back to the department and started all of the research. And that's kind of what was said to me, you know, long run, is if you do all of the work and this turns out to be something that's feasible, then we'll consider it. So I started all the work.
And it sounds like, even though it was probably a heavy workload, it sounded like you were kind of happy to do so because you saw this opportunity that you've been thinking about finally materialized. There was a door open when your chief responded that way. So you felt like, okay, I got to do some serious work, serious research, but it's worth it if it gets us a therapy dog here at the department.
Absolutely. I would say I probably did 40 hours of research, just looking up articles online where they referenced success with therapy dogs, looking up all the negatives. I also looked into any cost that there would be. That's always a big thing in government, is what's that final dollar. Amount. So, and then breeds and programs that were available. Yes, I did a lot of research.
So I'd just be curious, even though obviously you proceeded, and we're going to talk briefly about pension in a moment, of course, but what were the negatives that, as you did that huge amount of research, I'd be curious to know what the downside that people have found in implementing similar programs.
So one of the things that I did find was the therapy dog use with victims. When the dog is involved from the very beginning of their interview, then sometimes some defense attorneys will push back on that case and insist that the dog is involved in every interview. And in, let me just give you an example, maybe a serious sexual battery case where it happened when the child was maybe 8 or 9 and it takes 4 or 5 years to get through the court system. It may be that the dog was older at the time and is not available 4 or 5 years later, or then that child who wanted the dog when they were 8 or 9, they aren't so much interested in the dog when they're 13, 14 years old. Yeah. And so that the defense attorneys were kind of like, well, you wanted the dog then, you have to have the dog now. So that was one of the little hiccups. And we said, that's fine with us. What I'll do is I'll confer with our ISD, our Investigative Services Division, and their supervision. And if they believe that the benefit outweighs what could be a negative in the long run, then we'll still involve the dog in that. But if they think, well, we'll just have the dog involved in the beginning part, but not necessarily the formal interview, then we can do that as well. Yes, a negative, but there was definitely ways around it.
Yeah, it sounded like there was a way to solve and mitigate that occasional negative and proceed. Yeah. So tell me about pension, starting with his name.
So it actually is a funny story. When I started all the research, we were sitting around the dinner table. I have a 13 and a 15-year-old daughter. And my 15-year-old daughter always jokes that, you know, I'm still in the line of work for my pension. I only have 1 year left until I can collect. And she's like, Mom, at the time, also, the chief was really interested in a female dog. So she's like, Mom, wouldn't it be funny if you named her pension and called her Penny for short? And so that's how it all started. And then when we ended up with the male, after all the selection process was done, I went to her and I said, I still think pension would work. We just might have to lose the Penny. And she's like, either way, it's awesome. So yeah, that's how that came about.
Cool. So one of the things about this story that I really love is that pension is a rescue dog. There's many working dogs that are sort of bred for the particular job they're doing, and I often understand the rationale behind that, but sometimes see it as a missed opportunity, given so many shelter dogs who could be put to work and trained and have a new home, which is sound like exactly what happened with Pension, right?
Yes, Pension was a rescue from the Brevard County Animal Shelter, and he is phenomenal. It's almost like he knew that this is what he was meant to do. So.
Oh, that's great. So talk a little, we're sort of nearing the end of our time, Sergeant Cicada, but talk a little bit about the training involved, both pensions as a dog prior to you guys teaming up. And then I guess you guys had extensive training as a team.
Yes. So like I said earlier, Pension was selected by the program called Paws and Stripes, which is a program through the Brevard County Sheriff's Office. And they partner with the Brevard County Animal Shelter. They selected him from the shelter based on his demeanor and the way he is thinking that he would be good for this type of work. They have had him since November-ish, and he's been in training with an inmate and the Paws and Stripes program. So he does basic obedience with them until they believe he's reached a point where he would be ready to be deployed to an agency. And then in the beginning of April, I went over to the Brevard County Sheriff's Office, and we completed 40 hours of team training so that we are now considered a K-9 team.
That's so great. So at this point, given all that training and everything that's happened, how do you and Pensions your days, or how will you? I don't know if this is officially launched at this point, or if you guys are already deployed as a team. And if so, how do you spend those days?
So we are official. We have already launched. He comes in to work with me. I work Monday through Friday, mostly 7 a.m. to 3 p.m., but I do adjust my hours so that he can touch every shift, since we have, you know, obviously shift work and guys that work overnight.
Yeah.
I walk in to the PD and kind of let him off lead, and he sort of roams and goes find people in need or somebody who will play with him. And he does that for about an hour every morning. And then usually I end up having a meeting, or like I said earlier, I'm the sergeant in charge of the school resource officer. So I probably usually have a school I have to go to. So he'll hop in the car with me and we'll go do our daily activities, whether I said like a meeting or a school we have to visit or a library we have to go to. And then we're usually back around lunchtime every day so that he can hang around and see everybody at lunch. And then our afternoons are back and forth as well between city hall visits, employee visits here, and then once again out on the road, he goes with me to whatever event I have. For now, our ultimate goal as an agency is that maybe one day he'll be able to be off lead here at the agency and not get into trouble or try and run out the front door.
Has that been happening?
No. I was joking. No, he's actually really good.
Yeah. That training, that probably wouldn't be likely to happen.
Right. So. No, what it is more the officers have to. So the program said that if he can be off lead within the department, it'll take between 1 and 3 years for that to happen. And it's not so much training of him, it's training of the officers and the civilians to watch the doors, watch him at their feet, make sure they don't, you know, we do package narcotics and other things for evidentiary values. They have to make sure they don't drop pills on the floor. So it's not his training that's needed. It's more us as employees that have to be trained.
I see. Well, this all sounds very good and it sounds promising. And I assume Pension lives with you?
He does. He goes home with me at night.
Yeah.
My 13-year-old is absolutely in love with him. She wraps him up in a blanket and I walk in there in the afternoon, you know, in the evening, and just his little nose is sticking out the tip and he's in heaven. He loves to cuddle.
That's great.
Yeah. So.
And I'm sorry if you did mention that and I missed it, but what exactly? I know he's a rescue, but what specific kind of dog is he, or is he kind of just a nice mix?
He's a mixed breed. They say he has some boxer and some terrier in him, but definitely a mixed breed.
Cool. That's the best kind, I think, to adopt and give a job to. So this sounds like a great opportunity for Pension, for you, for the Largo Police Department, and everybody else. So thanks so much for making the time to join us. We've been speaking with Sergeant Haley Cicada from the Largo Police Department about the new therapy dog Pension. So thank you so much for joining us on Talking Animals.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
All right. My thanks again to Sergeant Cicada and the Largo Police Department. So we're covering the animal scene today in Ukraine and in Largo. And another local note, I want to tell you about an event coming up this Sunday, May 19th, called Pets for Vets, and it's a fundraiser and adoption event supporting the Rescues for Military Veterans program under Dogs Allowed Tampa Bay. So there'll be adoptable dogs from Compassion Kind Rescue. You can learn about their veteran program. There'll be a food truck there, live music from Greg Penny, a raffle of prizes, and I think a donation. This is held at the Crooked Thumb Safety Harbor. I think they'll be donating $1 from each beer sold. So, sounds like a great event. So, this Sunday, May 19th, from 1 to 4 p.m. at Crooked Thumb. So, try to make it over to that. You know, I think you'll have a great time. And we have just about reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals on WNF Tampa. Coming up on WNF, it's Slice of Life, the wonderful show hosted by Randy Zimmerman and others. After that, we shift back to music programming with Jim Bannon holding forth from 1 to 3, followed by Nancy C hosting the Wednesday Traffic Jam from 3 to 6, at which point our terrific Wednesday night block of Latin music kicks in. Next Wednesday, May 22nd, on Talking Animals, My guest will be Melissa Hoppert, deputy editor of live coverage and a horse racing writer for the New York Times, and along with Joe Drape, one of two reporters featured in the new horse racing documentary, Broken Horses, New York Times production, currently streaming on Hulu. So I invite you to join me for that then. Also invite you to join, or to visit, I should say, I guess, talkinganimals.net for audio archives of every show we've ever broadcast. Apple Podcasts are there too, as well as other podcast platforms. And these kind of links to our social media pages and more. So you can also subscribe to our newsletter to find out about our guests a couple of days beforehand and other news from the Talking Animals world. So I do hope that you will go to WMNF.org and in the Donate Now corner, just click on that, give us an early donation, and that drop-down menu, go down to Talking Animals, TLA Talking Animals, and put a few bucks to give us a head start on the fund drive. That'd be fantastic. We'd really appreciate it. So, I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. This is Talking Animals on WNF Tampa, Brandon, Clearwater, Largo, Weekiwachee, and beyond. Slice of Life coming up momentarily at the NPR News headlines. Jim Bannon, followed by Nancy C. And so much more good stuff on WNF Tampa. Thanks.